session number 10012, reel 1.
Mr. George Clayton, Reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Clayton?
I was born at Ox Hill Villa, an old colliery houses that were for the officials at the colliery. There was 5 officials lived in this row, old Ox Hill Villa, and the colliery was only about 100 yards from where this Ox Hill Villa was. It was South Tunfield Colliery, that was the right name, and it was owned and controlled by Lord Joycey, who was a big colliery owner, several collieries round about this locality here. And as I say, my grandfather, he was the boss at the coke ovens, and we lived in this official's house, number 3, Ox Hill Villa, and it was in a stone's throw of the colliery, the South Tunfield Colliery. And my father was killed in that pit when I was 7 years of age.
He worked as an ordinary miner, did he? Was he an ordinary miner?
He was a miner, yes. He was a coal hauler. A coal hauler, and he was accidentally killed with a fall of stone from the roof. He'd been under this stone, do you see, and it came away anyway, and he was buried up and killed, or he died shortly afterwards anyway. They got him out alive, but he was soon dead afterwards. And that's one of my early memories. And
did the family receive any support from either the coal owners or the colliery owners or the union after this death?
You know what? Of course, there was 4 sons and 1 daughter. None of us were working. The youngest one was 6 weeks, and the oldest one was 12 years of age when my father was accidentally killed. And well, my mother had a good mother, I will say that. She got on baking bread. There wasn't many baker's shops at them time of days, you know. The majority of people baked their own bread around about here. And she could always get buyers for a loaf of bread. And then in summertime, she made ginger beer. We were now a great big battery of coke ovens, and very hot work, you know, working in coke ovens. And she had a good sale for this ginger beer. That was a help her income a bit during the summertime. And then a break, and then she got on keeping hens and ducks and could always get a sale for the eggs and sometimes the birds as well, you know. People would buy them that wanted to, especially in Christmas time, and they would always buy a cocked chicken. And the eggs, she had a good sale from them.
Now, what you said off the tape, you said you got compensation from the colliery.
We did, yes. There was we got £100 in compensation. No, my mother did. And then there was what they call a permanent fund. That was my father got subscribed to that, and the majority of miners did subscribe to that. So if there was an accident and you're laid off work, you got so much from this permanent fund. And, my mother got, I think it was 5 shillings for herself and 0.5 crown a week. 5 shillings a week for herself and 0.5 crown for each of us. There was 5 of us, she got 0.5 crown each for. And then the 5 shillings for herself, that was what we had to live upon in those days. But whoever...
Did the union...
Eh?
Did the union help at all? The NUM, the National Miners?
Well, this permanent fund, it was a branch of the union, you know. Yes, that was Yes, that was in connection with the union. Yes, and that went on till we started work. And when you started work, well, that ceased, you know.
What education did you get? What education did you get?
Where did you go to just at the board school, what they called the board school. It was, well, you started there when you five was a starting age, and you could leave, you had to leave at 14. But when I got to 13, well, you were able to sit what they called a labour examination. Now, if you were successful, you could leave when you were 13. Well, when I was 13, there was a labour examination announced for the Saturday. And I put my name down at 13 that I would sit the labour examination. So we went to another school called Tanfield Lane, not far from here, and that's where I sat the labour examination.
What sort of things were you examined in? What did they examine you in?
Well, you had to give an account of what you'd like to be when you left work and what kind of work it would be. Well, I'd lived next door to a pit all my life. The pit was no far away in yon garage yonder.
100 yards.
The Ox Hill pit where I was living. Well, we used to play among the pit tubs, you know, and the timber and... Oh, that was all playground, really, the surface of the pit. And I knew quite a lot about the pit, really, and more about a coal mine than I did about anything else. So anyway, when the Friday came around, after I'd been to the examination, the headmaster came around. He says, "I've got a certificate for you, Clayton." Oh, I says, "Well," he says, "you passed your labour examination." Well, that was on the Friday. He gave me the certificate. On the Monday, I had a job working at the Charlie Pitt Brickworks. I had a brother that was working in the brickworks, and when he went back on the Saturday morning, he worked on the Saturdays, he says, he told the boss that he'd got a brother had left school, he'd passed the labour examination, and he says he would like a job. Tell him to come here on Monday and he can start. That's as quick as I got the job, and I started at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Before we go on to the actual work at the coke works, what had you been taught at school? Was it the 3 R's or had it gone much beyond that? Reading, writing and arithmetic?
Well, there was reading, writing, arithmetic. We did got up to fractions and our arithmetic, and then I would say we were taught to read and write, and well, I would say it was we didn't go into the higher mathematics, you know, but we got as far as fractions and decimals. We did decimals as well. That would be as far as we got. And over, as I say, I got through the exam and then started to the Charlie Brickworks.
Now, you were 13 and a half, you say. When
13
you
and a half,
so
yes.
That would be 1904 you started work at the brickworks.
Well, I imagine it would be. I was 13, and I was born in 1891. So that would be 1904.
Yes. So could you tell me now exactly what you did at the brickworks, what your job was and what your daily routine
yes.
and when you got up was?
There was a big mill, what they call a pug mill, and there was a clay quarry. Well, the clay quarry was a distance away from the works, but there was a gangway, and out the quarry there was two cages and a little steam winch. It used to wind one up and another cage went down, you see. And when he got his full tube out there, the man would put another one in here and take the empty tube out, you see, and then reverse, you see, bring it back again. But Well, it was tipped near where the pug mill was, and then that empty tub was taken away back and let down. It was a shaft, really, that went down to the quarry. It would be about 40 feet deep. And, the clay was ground in there. Then it went up with some elevators and was riddled. And then it came down a chute into where the machines was making. There was a worm in this box that it went into, and the clay was ground around there. It screwed around with this worm, you know. It was mixed with a certain amount of water. There was a lad there, well, it was my job one time. You had to regulate the amount of water that made it semi-plastic. It wasn't altogether soft, it wasn't altogether hard, but this worm got a hold of it, and it pushed it forward into what we called a cylinder. And that was a shape of a brick. Well, it was punched out with a puncher, and it was punched out, and then there was a big press in connection with the machine. It came down and pressed the brick. It made an imprint, what we called a frog, at the top and the bottom, which makes that's really useful for binding. When the clay is in there, it binds better with this frog that's in the middle of the brick. That's what it was for. And then it was taken away from there. There was a man's job there, and we put them bricks into a bogey. We had to put 60 bricks in there. And that was semi-plastic. And you had to be very careful you didn't break any corners off. Well, an old Lancashire man, he was being an old brickmaker himself, and if he saw a corner off, well, he used to nearly bite a head off. You had to be lift them carefully. You have to lift them like lifting eggs, he said, him to break them. So anyway, that was my job, so until I got on.
Were you always on this testing of the amount of water?
Oh, no.
What other jobs did you have?
I got onto the collieries. I was a boiler fireman.
No, I mean, in the actual coke, in the brick making works, were you always on the adding the water and the mixture?
Oh, no, I got as far as burning the bricks. I think I would do every job in the brickworks except the boss's job. I was never a boss, but... But I was a setter and a drawer. Well, a setter is he loads the kilns, you know, with a space between each brick. You haven't to put the bricks together. You have to allow about an inch space setting, you see, so the heat can and the kiln can travel right around them. That's the idea. Well, that was the setter's job, to arrange the bricks in the kiln. He started on the floor, you know, and then built his way up. Oh, the kiln would be about 12 feet high, 10 feet anyway. And when he got so many built up, he could stand on them and still build them right up, you know, to the top of the kiln. And the burning... I burned the bricks. And,
what did that involve?
It depended what quality or kind of brick you wanted. If it was what they call a common brick, you could burn them off in 3 days. But if it was a facing brick, many times see these red bricks, you know, a bunch of houses there, that's a facing brick. Well, that used to take about 3 days longer, about 6 days. You had to heat them up, and then you had to cool them off, slack your fires, and then put your heater on, get your heat on again, build them up lower, red hot again, and that left a better surface than if they were just withdrawn, you know. You often notice in a brick there's a mark in the center. It's better if the bricks all a plain colour, you know, plain red. But if you notice a bit, you'll notice a lot as we have called it the fog mark. Why, that's it being burned into it being made drawn in too big of a hurry. Well, if you heat it, your kills right up, got your brick to a red colour, a red hot colour, but not too hot, and then allow your face to slacken, and then when the brick becomes red hot, you know, you can say, yeah, but well, you can look through into your kill and see what it's looking like. And then we used to measure brick when it was burnt. We used to put a rod down under the first brick, with a hole from the top of the kill, and put an iron rod down. And when we got so down to the hole, you know, we'd put a mark on that iron rod we'd put down. And then we were able to measure how many inches the kiln of bricks had fallen. That's how you knew when the bricks were hard. Well, if I remember right, I think it was about 5 inches. That was when your kiln had had enough. And you hadn't to put that heat on too quick or too slow. There's a bit of an art in burning bricks, which was, well, you acquired it with practice, you know, I was started that job in my teens, and well, your teenage, you're keen on learning, at least I was anyway, and I think a majority of people will be. And
did you actually have to stoke the furnace to create the heat?
Oh, there was a little furnace at each side, you know, and they were good coals. There was a truckload of coals put near where we could bury the coal that we wanted. And there was 2 little furnaces of each side. And we had a slide, you know, you could pull the door up with, and then we lit a fire there and got the bricks. You've got to apply your heat gently first, because all the moisture has to be out of the brick before you really give it the severe heat, you know. And, we used to put fires on, but we didn't used to shut the door. It was both one side and the other side had fires. There was 4 fires to each kill. And, It took about 2 days drying the bricks. Although they were semi-plastic, you were able to they were being pressed, you know, and they were really pretty hard. But it took a couple of days to dry them. If they weren't dry, when you applied the severe heat, the brick would split. So if you were sure that your kiln was dry, which we used to put a rod down, and if there was moisture on this rod when you drew it back, you know that it wasn't dry, not dry enough. So we keep our fires good maybe an hour or 2 longer, then have another try, see what it looked like, and then you'd see that there was no moisture coming back. Well, then the moisture was all out of those bricks. Then you could start firing in earnest.
Did you ever make a mistake?
Oh, there's mistakes made, without a doubt. But, if you got your heat on too quick, the brick would burst out. But they had a use for them. You used to send them down the pits, and that was to build stoppings, what they call stoppings. When they want to direct the air to another part of the pit, used to put these brick stoppings in, and that would, there would find its way, well, least resistance, you know, and when this big stopping was put in, Or it would maybe want to, they had to go to the left for that. It would go away to the left. Or maybe if you wanted to the right, well, if that was the only airway, if you'd stop this one, well, there would go to the left. That's why you used a lot of bricks. But
so your job was to look after, to do this judging, decide when the bricks were done and ready for fire, proper firing. But you would also stoke the two furnaces as well, would you, with coal?
Oh, yes. We, well, it was the bricks used to sink. You see, it maybe if we got them dry and we closed with fire doors and applied the heat, you know, in about 3 days' time, or 5 days' time, three days for the common bricks. For the facing bricks, it used to take 5. But when them bricks had sunk about 5 inches, we used to put an iron rod down, you know, under the top of the brick, just the top brick, and then measure it, just measure it off. And when it was 5 inches down, then we had to stop the firing.
What other jobs did you have besides the setter, the burner, and the mixer? Did you have any other jobs in there?
I walked in the quarry. I walked wheeling the clay into the pug mill. I've been a setter and I've been a burner. I think I was every job really in the brickworks except being the boss.
How many hours would you work a day?
For six o'clock in the morning till 5 at night. You got from 8 o'clock in the morning till 8:30. That was your breakfast time. And from 12 till 1 was your midday break. So you work from 6 in the morning till 5 o'clock at night. And we got 8 shillings a week for 6 shifts.
6 days.
Of course, Saturday, it was a short day. We started at 6 in the morning. We got half an hour for breakfast at 8 till 8:30. Then we finished at 12 o'clock. That was counted as shifts, the same as the other. You got 6 days. And for 6 days, I got 8 shillings a week. That was the wages in those days.
Now, you mentioned earlier it was very hot in the coke, you know. What were conditions like when you were working in there?
Well, the weather had a lot to do with it. In cold weather, well, it was grand weather for when you were drawing bricks, you know. But on a red hot summer day when there wasn't any breeze, no wind, you know, that used to help you a lot, the wind. Of course, you had the big doors you opened to the kilns, you know, the wind, the air would get in when there was a big doorway, and that helped a lot. But there's many a time in summertime, the things wouldn't heat, and we were paid so much, $1,000 for the bricks. We had a shilling a thousand, I think it was, and that was piecework. Well, we used to work jolly hard to get the bricks out. The more bricks you got out, well, the more money you made.
How many bricks would there be in one kiln?
Well, there was one kiln, what they called a Hoffman kiln. That was a continuous kiln. It was a German idea. And the other ones was what they called the downdrafts. There were these downdrafts, 15,000 used to fill them. And that usually, normally, we would take 12,000 out in a day. 12, that fills six wagons that are 2,000 bricks in. That was rail wagons, you know. And then there was carts and horses used to come as well, with a big coupe cart, as they call them. It would carry anything from 200 to 250. But in a railway wagon, we used to put 2,000 in. That's what that's the quantity that they carried. Yeah.
How did you get on with your workmates?
Oh, to get on with your workmates? Well, there's some fellas very good to work with, and I think it'll apply to everybody. Some are not so good, you know. There's I think on a whole, we always agree to differ.
Did you have a union?
Yes, there was a union, but that was for miners. And, Well, it didn't make much matter whether you were in the union or not when you were with the brickworks. So they didn't know whether you were factory hands or whether you were main hands or what you were. And I would think the majority, there was one or two in the union, but I would say the majority was in no union at all. Not like the miners when you got into the coal mines. You had to be a union, otherwise... there'll be deputation to the boss to get you taken off the job altogether, so it appeared you to be in the union.
What were the bosses like in the brickworks?
What an old Lancashire man, he was a very strict fella. Very strict indeed. He'd been a brickmaker in Lancashire, and I can only say he was a very strict man indeed. It was hard work, it was all... You're following the machine up, you know, the machine set the pace and you had to keep up with that pace. If he saw a corner of a brick, that was semi-plastic, but he had to load 60 into a bogey, then there was a man wheeled that away to the kill, to where they were burnt. And if you knocked a corner off of one, which was easily done, you had to handle them. He used to say, you have to handle them like eggs. Handle them gently. And if you broke a corner off, which it was very easily done, well, he used to bite your head off nearly, you know. And yet, after they were burnt, well, it just used to pitch them about anywhere. It didn't matter whether the corners was off or not, but if you did it gently, there wasn't any corners off. And he could see, you know, see the bricks that were stacked up to about 60. They were all packed one on top of another. But the one just pelted in, you know, though they handled gently, and one on top of the other, 60 was the load.
This was your foreman that you're talking about here, or was this the...
He was the foreman, yes, yes. He wasn't the owner. The bricks was owned by the colliery company.
Did you see much of the higher management? Did you see much of the higher management, you know?
Yes, there was some time there was the colliery manager come and he had a look around and the engineer come and have a look around. He had a look at the machinery, you know. There was sometimes breakdowns and we were jolly glad many times when they did break down because you got a bit of rest.
How many men were there in the...
Oh, I would think there'd be about 30. There was the quarry men. There would be about 10 men in the quarry, I think. And then there was two men used to wheel. It was tipped into a heap. There was a gangway away from the quarry, and the tubs came away down there with a man. He piloted them tubs down, and then he tipped them in a copy, we used to call it, you know, the kick-up that the tub comes over like that, do you see? It's all empty out and then spins back again. Then he draws the tub out from there, and then it goes away back down to the quarry again, filled again.
Now, you mentioned the quarry. Is that different from the pit? Was it a clay quarry?
Oh, yes, with a clay... It was above the pit, you know. The pit was much deeper. It would be about 40 feet deep, this quarry was, from what was the surface, where they got to the bottom.
What did you do in there when you worked there? What was your job when you were actually in the quarry?
Job was to... clay and segar clay when you got... It was a field clay for about the first 20 feet deep. And then there was a layer of stone, I would call it. It was like a hard stone. And it would be about 18 inch to 2 feet thick. And then away from there, you got onto what we call a segar clay. That's a light grey kind of a clay, you know. It's more like a semi-stone. But it's very good for making bricks.
How did you get it out?
Oh, it was a hew out with picks and shovels.
And
dig it out. And then it was filled. You had a tub away from what was the... As I told you, there was a lift with two cages in. It was about
Yes, you
told me about
that.
About 40 feet. Well, then you had a tub the same as what they used in the coal miners' tubs.
And you'd load it onto that, then?
You filled that, yes, and then you brought it down to the shaft and put it into the cage, you know, and then wrapped it away. The way the man at the top, he had a winch, a steam winch, that brought that to the surface.
How long did you do this quarry work?
How long did I do it?
Actually, on the clay quarry.
Oh, I was never a permanent man, but I've been in many times when there was maybe, we weren't getting enough clay, you know, and there'd maybe be some men off work in the quarry, and they would set me and maybe some more to have a go at the quarry, to use the clay and fill the tubs, and then there was...